Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And we are coming to you from multiple locations once again today. I am Paul Harris, live in downtown St. Louis in the poker room of the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel, where their midday tournament is going on, and they've got 1-3 games and 3-6 games, and the big 5-10 game will be starting up a little bit this afternoon. My partner Dennis Phillips is on the road again in New York City. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And also joining us from Poker Coach World Headquarters in Southern California is the poker coach himself, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Paul.
Nice to have you both on the phone with me today. And let's just talk a little bit about what's going to come up later on in the show. We've got Joe Cada, the kid who just over a week ago became a multimillionaire by coming in first in the World Series of Poker main event. They played the final table last weekend. We talked a little bit about it on last week's show. Now we've had a chance to see it on ESPN, and today we get a chance to talk to Joe. Actually, Dennis and I had to record the interview with Joe early this morning because Dennis is helping Joe get around in New York for a whole bunch of publicity gigs, right?
You talk about the blind leading the blind. It's amazing. But yeah, no, I'm having a lot of fun here. I'm traveling around with him. We are actually heading over to the Letterman show here in about 23 minutes.
Fantastic.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
And that will air tonight. And I was thinking back about whether I've ever seen another poker player, I mean professional poker player, on the Letterman show, and I think maybe he had Chris Moneymaker on, but I can't remember any others. Can either of you?
There's only been two. In 03, he had Chris Moneymaker, and in 04, he had Annie Duke. Nobody since 04 has been on Letterman.
Wow. Well, Joe being the youngest World Series of Poker main event winner of all time, he's turning 22 years old tomorrow, will certainly be the youngest poker player to ever be on the Letterman show. Were you actually over there this morning doing some prep with him? What's that like? Fill us in on your day.
Oh, the day's been awesome. We've been traveling around doing a lot of different things with the media, a number of different interviews. Did the pre-interview with Letterman, what questions you're going to ask, how comfortable are you on this, you know, any subjects you don't want to touch. Not that he won't touch on them anyhow, but, you know, at least he knows ahead of time what the response is going to be. And just trying to make Joe feel comfortable.
Is he nervous?
A little bit, but he's handling it well. He really has a great attitude. For a 21-year-old, he's got a square head on his shoulders, and he just kind of talks from the heart.
All right, well, we'll play that Joe Cada interview for you in about a half hour or so here on the Lumiere Place final table. Other things we have to get to today. Dennis, I guess we can announce today that you renewed your deal with your sponsor.
This is true. We've inked another deal, kind of an expanded deal with PokerStars. My role has expanded a little bit, doing things like this mentoring with Joe, some of the other aspects, trying to get some feedback from grassroots type thing from players in the U.S. to PokerStars, just a wide variety of things on top of being able to travel around the world and play poker. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited about it.
Congratulations on that, and they will be sending you off on even more missions to spread the word about PokerStars.
Absolutely, and hopefully to get some people in Washington to listen. Some of these changes have got to be made. They've got to get out of our pockets and our everything else and let us just play poker.
All right, let's talk about some other stuff you've been up to. I'm kind of going in reverse order here. Let's go back to last Thursday when you were at the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas, a chance to play against some of the top players in the world on a little TV show called High Stakes Poker. We had been hyping this thing up for a month before you went out there, and I guess you probably can't tell us much about it, can you?
We're not supposed to talk much about it. It airs in the middle of February. Let me tell you, there was some great play. I can't tell you who was on it. I got the great privilege of sitting to the right of Durr. Everybody just congratulated me on that seat selection.
Wow.
So I was in, yeah, right. I was in seat one, he was in two, Barry was in three, Phil was in four, Patrick was in five, Daniel was in six. Need I go on? It was a pretty easy lineup.
So that's Tom Dwan to your left, Barry Greenstein to his left, Phil Ivey to his left?
Correct.
Patrick Antonius to his left, Daniel Negreanu to his left, and who else was at the table? There's two spots open. Who filled those seats?
Well, there were two other people. Phil Helmuth was supposed to be there, and he backed out at the last minute. They pulled in a gentleman from England to play there on it, and then there was another gentleman from Denmark that showed up there, Lex. And he was the newbie on the show that a lot of people hadn't played with or anything on it. And he's a good player, but they did pick on him a little bit during it.
I think you're talking about Lex Veldhuis, who, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he make the final table of the 40K event this summer?
Yep, that's him.
He did. Like I said, very good player.
So I know they won't let you talk.
I'll tell you what, I was looking around to find the donkey, and somebody handed me a mirror.
Now, I know that they won't let you talk about any of the hands you played, but tell us a little bit about the atmosphere. You're obviously not playing in a real poker room. It's a TV set that they've built there, right?
Correct, it is. It is a TV set. It's one they've had now for several different years. It's the one that in the past Daniel Negreanu has had a major problem in winning at. Even though he's played good poker, it seems like if somebody gets quad, Daniel always has a full boat behind him, that type of
right.
thing. I was talking to Maury afterwards over there, and we were laughing and joking because Daniel offered to buy the set from him so he can burn it. I thought that was ridiculous, but yeah, I think he was serious about it. It's a great atmosphere. They take care of you very well. You're playing some of the highest quality of poker you can imagine there, sitting with these guys that you love to watch on TV. I had a great time, and I'm ready to go back, no doubt about it.
What were the financial aspects of this? How much did you buy in for, and what were the blinds?
Set up with a 400, 800 with a $200 ante. That did not go up. Stayed that way the whole night. Obviously, there's times when we do a straddle around the table, different things like that on it. The minimum you can sit down with is $200,000. The maximum is $500,000. And that was pretty much the difference in it. You either sit down with the two or the five. One or the other. Most of the people sit down with the $200,000, and that's what I started with on it. And then you could add some chips to it if you got down a little bit or whatever you wanted to do. Daniel had carried over from the previous day. I think he sat down with about $330,000.
Very interesting.
It was fun.
And do they tell you, when you mentioned Maury, by the way, that's Maury Eskandani, who's the executive producer of High Stakes Poker, who we had as a guest earlier this year, talking a little bit about the show. But now that you've been on the inside, I'm curious, does Maury or one of the other producers come up to you ahead of time and tell you, look, we're putting on a TV show here, and we want you to play a lot of hands, we want you to talk? What kind of instructions do they give you?
No, absolutely did not. They wanted me to feel comfortable. They wanted me to play whatever and however I wanted to. Gave us no instructions that way at all, and I thought that was great. They said, you're supposed to go out there and play and have fun. Obviously, it's for TV. We like you to be interactive if you can. But just go out there and play your game. Don't worry about it. I kind of got a free pass this time because it was my first time there. They didn't expect a lot out of me. Now, if I go back there again, then maybe I have to start talking tales about Paul and Joe and the rest of them.
I'm just thinking to myself, guys, they tell you go out there and have fun. There's Phil Ivey. There's Durr. There's Daniel. Okay, wait a minute.
Yeah, so how much fun can you have? And let's be honest here. You have played in high roller events against two, three, four of these guys at the same time. Here's a whole table of killers. I mean, that's what you've got there. It's murderer's row of poker there. Were you intimidated when you sat down?
Surprisingly, I really wasn't because, like I said, I'd played with them before. I also knew that since Durr was to my left, nobody expected me to be, the most aggressive one at the table or anything with him sitting back there, which kind of gave me a little breathing room on it. I didn't have to worry about it. I knew he was going to be forcing the action most of the time. So, I played accordingly.
How long was the session?
We started around 2:30 in the afternoon, and it lasted till past midnight. With breaks taken out of it, just playing poker, we probably had 8 solid hours of playing poker at least.
And did you get to see Gabe Kaplan? Was he there? And what about the new hostess on the show, Kara Scott? Tell us what the deal is with her, because she has replaced A.J. Benza as Gabe Kaplan's co-host. What's the setup there?
Oh, yeah, she was there, talked to her. It was her first, series here, too, those three days were. Absolutely fit in without a problem. It's like fitting a good glove. Did the intros, did the exits, did the rest of it. She'll do a lot of the other interviews. Individually, we were doing interviews even during the show a little bit. She absolutely fit in perfectly. I think this is going to be a great show.
Does she sit down there on the set with you like Leanne Tweeden does on Poker After Dark and get players away from the table to do interviews with? Is that the new setup for high-stakes poker?
No, she actually doesn't sit at the table or anything like that. You'll take breaks, obviously. You're there for 12 or 13 hours. There's every now and then you have to take a break. You can go off to the side and talk, and maybe she'll ask you a question or something. But she let us play the game, which is what I loved. We were there to play, and we would get so engrossed sometimes in the game, you wouldn't even realize the cameras were there next to you.
And what about Gabe?
Gabe is Gabe. Gabe's fun to be around, let me tell you. Always with the little jokes and that. Very intelligent man, very down-to-earth. Love talking to him. Sat around and had a meal with him, everything. He's a good guy.
Now, speaking of Gabe, that brings us to the next thing as we go back here. By the way, Joe, did you have any other questions about high-stakes poker before we go to Poker After Dark?
No, I'm just thinking for Dennis, kind of a little bit of a bad beat just in that draw, for that game itself. For years past and all the shows I've seen, at least there's been a couple of, weakish type spots. And Dennis's game had to be, if not the toughest, one of the toughest ever as far as lineup goes, whereas no one's going to be there just giving their money away and making massive mistakes with that group.
That's actually what a couple of the guys, the producers around there, said, that might have been the toughest table they ever put together. I said, thanks, guys. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and by the way, didn't Barry Greenstein say just a couple of months ago that if the lineups were going to be like this, that he wasn't interested in doing it because he doesn't want to play himself against guys who are going to be so tough? Because, frankly, he doesn't go there to be on TV. He goes there to make money. Did Barry mention anything about that?
He didn't, which is a surprise to me, because that's exactly what he was quoted as saying. But Barry's there, and Barry can play with anybody. And he played very well during the 8 or 9 hours that we were playing. But that is not the lineup that Barry wanted, I guarantee that. And he was sitting between Durr and Phil Ivey. Lovely seat there also.
All right, we're not going to give anything away here. I know you can't give anything away about how you did or what the hands were that you played. We'll have to wait until the new season of High Stakes Poker debuts February 14th, Sunday nights at 7 o'clock Central Time on GSN. And we still have to talk about Poker After Dark and also a tournament that just took place here in St. Louis this weekend. We'll get to all of that as the Lumiere Place final table continues here in just a moment. And also on the way, our interview with Joe Cada, the new champion of the world of poker, the guy who won the main event of this summer's World Series of Poker at that November 9 final table last weekend. This portion of the show is brought to you by Poker Stars, the home of both Dennis Phillips and Joe Cada.
Absolutely, and I'm telling you, this is unbelievable. PokerStars has done it again. Joe Cada is now a member of Team PokerStars Pro. He joins all the rest of them that we have there. You've got, look at it in the last few years, Chris, and then Greg, and then Joe, and then Peter, and now another Joe. This is unbelievable. It seems like the best players in the world, the ones that are always up there at the top and always on the final table, always go to PokerStars. So guys, if you want to play against these, if you want to play against me, go to PokerStars.net, get your game up there and going, and let's shuffle up and deal, as they say.
We'll be back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table right after this on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Hi, Bob Eubanks here. I can't wait to come to town with my $250,000 game show spectacular.
This November, the game shows you once loved are your chance to win big cash at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotels. Play through November to win a seat in the game show audience November 28th. And if Bob Eubanks calls your name, you could be one of 50 to take home cash and prizes. And 6 lucky contestants will play for their chance at $250,000. Get to Lumiere Place and earn your spot in the audience today. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Tuesday is Poker Day on 590 The Fan KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris live from downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by One Time Apparel. I'm wearing my One Time Final Table hat right now. One Time Apparel is the company founded by Kevin Steffen, a St. Louis poker player, who introduced it at Pokerpalooza this summer at the World Series of Poker and had lots of people interested in all those shirts and sweatshirts and hats he was selling. He's expanded the line even more now, and even more poker players and fans and pros are putting on their one-time hats and shirts and zip-up hoodies and more. You can find out about all the products that One Time sells by going to onetimeapparel.com. Charge it to your credit card, use PayPal, and a portion of your proceeds will go to help out various charitable organizations that Kevin is affiliated with. Poker players are always looking for cool stuff to wear at the table. One Time is the great logo that you want to have on whatever you're wearing. If you need a sports shirt, if you need a T-shirt, if you need a polo shirt, if you need a baseball jersey, if you need a zip-up hoodie or a pullover hoodie, he's got plenty of those. And when it comes to hats, he's got fitted hats and flexible hats and pink camo hats for the ladies and hats with four aces on them and hats with that giant one-time logo right there on the front. For every poker player who's ever stood up, looked at that flop, gotten their money in and said, "One time, let me hit my card." This is the stuff you want to be wearing. OneTimeApparel.com is the website. We're happy to have them as a sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table. I am at Lumiere Place in downtown St. Louis. I'm Paul Harris. Dennis Phillips is in New York with Joe Cada, the new world champion of the world of poker. You'll hear our interview with him in about 10 minutes. Joe McGowan, the poker coach, is here as well. Later on, by the way, Joe, we've got some emails about Phil Ivey at the final table that we'll have to try to get to here, because people are asking what happened to Ivy at the final table. So we'll get to some of that in a little while, but now we still have Dennis's recent life to get to here. We've already talked about his work at the High Stakes Poker and also hanging around at the final table of the World Series of Poker, but you also were sitting at dinner at the Golden Nugget a couple of Fridays ago when somebody came up and said, "Hey, you want to be on TV, right?"
It was kind of crazy. I got there fairly late. I was going to grab something at the Red Sushi at the Golden Nugget. And Gabe came walking up.
That's Gabe Kaplan.
For a minute. He said, Gabe Kaplan. Talked for a couple of minutes. He says, "Are you tired?" And I said, "No." He says, "Got any plans for the next couple hours?" I said, "Well, no." And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what. We got a seat open at the table. Why don't you go play?" I looked at him for a minute. He said, "What table?" And he said, "Well, poker after dark." Turns out, and I'm not going to mention any names, you're going to see it when you watch the show, somebody got all upset, lost all his chips, stood up from the table, and stormed out. Now, this is the cash game. This is not the tournament one. So they had an empty seat. They only had five people sitting there. And I said, "What the heck, let's go have some fun." And I took the seat for the last couple hours of the show.
For those of you who may not know it, Gabe is not on Poker After Dark, but it is produced by the same production company that does High Stakes Poker. And so he was there getting ready to do the High Stakes Poker shows this week, and I guess they were sending him out to recruit somebody and came upon you. So you go in, and now you're going to sit down on Poker After Dark, and who's there?
Well, let's see. Todd Bronson was in one seat. Mike Manasau was in the second seat. I was ended up in the third seat. Brandon Adams was in the fourth one. Antonius was in the fifth one. And there was a gentleman who I'd never played before in the sixth one over there that unfortunately I can't even think of his name right now. Solid player, more of an internet player, but I'd heard of him before, but never played with. The other guys I'd all played with before on it. And let me tell you, they were guessing who was going to be the person to walk on and all sorts of it. I guarantee my name never came up. When I walked in the door, it was like, whoa. You know, and I had a lot of fun on that show.
I'm guessing from the tone in his voice, Joe, that he made some money.
I was trying to think of who the person was that got all upset and stormed off. And first thought was Barry Greenstein or maybe Patrick Antonius.
Oh yeah, there you go. Those are the guys who go so easily. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got a good read on them, Joe.
Yeah.
Well,
let's
once you said Mike the Mouth was still there, it narrowed it down to one person in my mind that might have gotten all upset and stormed off. I can think of one person. I won't say, but I can think of one person maybe that it could have been.
I think we're thinking of the same person here, and I won't say who that is either. Anyway, when you go into Poker After Dark and it's a cash game, do you play for just one show? I know that they usually do a whole week of shows in one session. They brought you in for the end of that session. Is that what happened?
That's correct. They'd already been there for like 6-7 hours, something like that. So I'm guessing they normally, I think, get like 4 or 5 shows on each day, and I'll probably be on the last couple of shows on it. So the beginning will show the other mystery person out there, and then I'll end up finishing up the last couple of shows, last couple of hours.
And when is that going to air?
Again, starts in the middle of February. Both of them do.
Wow.
It's a brand new season, and away we go, as they say.
Is it the same setup as high-stakes poker, where since it's not tournaments, it's set up, is it same blinds, 400, 800 with 200 ante?
No.
Tell us about that.
This one was a minimum of 50,000 sit down, which is what most people did, and then the blinds were a lot less. It was 100, 200 with a $25 ante, although it was a straddle on almost every hand, so you know you're looking at 400 just to bring it in on it. And the stacks, since I did come in there a little later, I was at a bit of a disadvantage. A lot of the guys would have 100, 150,000 in front of them. They had also been playing with each other for a number of hours. But I fit in fairly well. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Never, well, I can't say too much, but it was fun.
Were there prop bets?
There weren't a whole lot of prop bets going on there, no. They kind of discouraged those now because it takes away from the game. They were getting so heavily into them that I believe the guys around the production crew were saying, let's not get into the prop bets, let's actually play some poker and worry about that on it. But this one you guys have got to watch, because I'm telling you, after the gentleman stormed off, there were a lot of comments, and it was quite entertaining, to say the least. There were props brought on there even. I can even tell you that much, but yeah, I better not get too in-depth.
Joe, I think we're right on the money.
You know, guys, when you mentioned the prop bets, Dennis, and how they did away with it, I'm actually a person that's very glad that they did away with it, because on Poker After Dark, you know how they do the final, like they do 5 shows, I believe, and then they do like an overall review, and they interview the players, like what were you thinking on this hand, and okay, he came in with this, so I thought I would do this, and I raised, and they talk about it. I didn't realize how much, you know, that red-black prop bet that was so popular and we've talked about before on the show, of course they're going to, you know, it's going to alter their play, but I didn't realize how much it altered their play. You know, when he limped on the button, I put him on 2 red cards, you know, and then when this guy raised, I thought it was very likely I had this, so I re-raised the 50,000. I mean, they're making huge decisions off that prop bet, which I didn't like, because I like to try to learn some things and look at it, you know, from my point of view of what I can pick up and what I can see based off poker, not as much off of what they're thinking because of a prop bet. You know what I mean? So I don't like it at all. I'd rather have it be just pure poker.
I agree 100%. And the thing that distracted me was at times that red-black flop prop between Phil Ivey and Zygmunt. I mean, they were playing $50,000, and there were times where the pot wasn't anywhere near $50,000,
right.
And so the prop bet was more important to them than what was happening in the hand. And I found that very distracting as a viewer. I hope that that's what Maury saw himself, and that's why he decided to make the change.
Right. Oh, I absolutely think that's what it was. So, again, that's pretty much been eliminated from it, and I think there's a very, very good show they put together. And I'm down about 90 seconds till I have to leave.
Okay. Tell us quickly about the Heartland Poker Tour tournament that was here in St. Louis this weekend.
Got back in. I actually changed my flight and everything to get from Vegas back just in time to do it. They had almost 300 people at the casino they're doing. It's the first time that the Heartland had been in the St. Louis. This was the largest tournament ever held in St. Louis. The buy-in in it was $1,600 for it, and it went very, very well. A lot of good, solid play. There were people there from Chicago, from Tunica, from Indiana. All came in to play this tournament. Like I said, just under 300 people on it. Went down, I believe, first prize was about $130,000. So it was a substantial first prize. Unfortunately,
nice.
I did not make the first prize, but I did get into the money. I finished 17th in it. I got knocked out with ace-10, with an ace-10 on the flop, and the other gentleman has the other two 10s. So I was pretty much dead in the water.
Wow.
It happens. That's poker, as they say.
Absolutely.
Had a great time, the guys there. It's more of a down-to-earth, every man's tournament. You can afford to do it. They had satellites to get into it. A lot of the guys I talked to, for $85, they were playing for $130,000. So
yeah.
It's a very good setup that way.
Well, I know a lot of people were in there from all over the St. Louis area and all over the Midwest playing as well. And just to compliment you, when I saw you Saturday afternoon, because I was playing some cash games that afternoon, when you came in, and I knew that you had been playing late the night before in Vegas, probably had gotten no sleep, gotten on a plane first thing that morning, then flown through Dallas and got here about 90 minutes before the event started, you looked like death warmed over. I mean, nothing personal, but you were in absolutely horrible shape. And I thought to myself, and now he's going to go play a tournament?
He's in top poker form. That's perfect for Dennis.
Well, yes, not exactly the first time I've done that, guys.
Well, congratulations, especially under those conditions, on coming in 17th out of 300 plus. I know we got to let you go because you and Joe have to run off and do the Letterman show and a bunch of other things. And we'll check in with you next week. Have fun. All right, so there's Dennis in New York. Joe McGowan is going to stay with us from the Poker Coach World Headquarters. We'll take a break here, and then when we come back, we will play for you the interview that Dennis and I recorded this morning, because we weren't going to let Letterman get the first crack at Joe Cada today. Dennis and I recorded an interview with Joe Cada, the new reigning champion of the world of poker. We'll have that for you in just a couple of moments. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the nonprofit membership organization that's comprised of online and offline poker players who support the game we love and want to fight for it in Congress and in state capitals and in courthouses all over the country. And with our game under assault for the last 5 years by legislators at all levels, there's never been a better time for you to become a member of the Poker Players Alliance. To do that, go to theppa.org. That's theppa.org. And become a member of the Poker Players Alliance. You see lots of players with that patch on their shirts when they're playing at events like the World Series of Poker and others. You can be a member of it as well. Go to that website, and for just $20, one of the best bets you'll ever make in your life, become a poker player who supports the game we love, poker, at theppa.org. This is 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com. More of the Lumiere Place Final Table right after this.
Hi, Bob Eubanks here. I can't wait to come to town with my $250,000 game show spectacular.
This November, the game shows you once loved are your chance to win big cash at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotels. Play through November to win a seat in the game show audience November 28th. And if Bob Eubanks calls your name, you could be one of 50 to take home cash and prizes. And six lucky contestants will play for their chance at $250,000. Get to Lumiere Place and earn your spot in the audience today. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watch. This is the company that makes the watch that Dennis wears on his wrist every day of his life, and it is a beauty. It is one of the most durable sports watches in the world. If you go to the website reactorwatch.com, you can see the model that Dennis wears and many others that are available for both men and women. And I have been with Dennis so many times where he's had to take the watch off his hand and show it around to the people at the table. In fact, he was telling me just the other day, after doing high-stakes poker, that one of the weirdest things for him was when sitting at a table with Phil Ivey and Daniel Negreanu and Tom Dwan and Barry Greenstein and Patrick Antonius, that they all had to see, feel, and touch the watch, the Reactor watch that Dennis was wearing at that table, just like he does every day. And I think a couple of them really liked what they had, and we may have sold a couple of Reactor watches to some high-stakes poker players. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for you. And these watches, by the way, are not just for high-stakes players. They're for poker players and non-poker players at every level. To find out what they are, check out the prices and check out the models, go to the website reactorwatch.com. All right, our interview segment today is with the new champion of the world of poker, Joe Cada. And by the way, it is pronounced Cada, not Cada. Joe won $8.5 million 8 days ago by being the last man standing at this year's World Series of Poker main event final table. He outlasted Phil Ivey and the other seven players, including Darvin Moon, at the final table this year, becoming the youngest World Series of Poker winner ever. Peter Eastgate's record lasted exactly 1 year before Joe Cada became the youngest player ever. We had him on the show a few months ago as he was prepping for that final table, and now that he's won it all, we're happy to welcome Joe Cada back to the Lumiere Place final table.
Thanks.
I understand you got a very busy schedule there in New York. Later on today, you're doing Letterman.
Yeah, I'm doing Letterman and a bunch of other things, CNN tomorrow and ESPN the next day.
And last night, where were you?
The wrestling match. Raw.
Dennis, you went with him?
I did. We got a ringside seat, let me tell you. Some of those guys are rather large.
And had a good time?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about things leading up to your birthday, which is tomorrow, I understand. You're going to be 22 tomorrow?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate.
What do you mean it's unfortunate?
I mean, just getting older from here.
Oh, yeah. It's all downhill to be a 22-year-old multimillionaire.
Okay, no comment about age, all right?
You know, actually, I do have an age-related question for you, because we talked about this on the show last week when we were talking a little bit about the final table and the fact that you guys played 17 and a half hours on that Saturday into Sunday morning and then came back on Monday night at 10 o'clock, and you and Darvin played for 2.5 hours. Do you think that the fact that you were so much younger than Darvin and some of the other players helped because you had more stamina than them in playing longer sessions like that?
I think it helped against some of the players. Darvin was there, you know, really tired towards the end of the day and noticed that. So it felt like age helped a little bit there, but not in all cases.
Have you played long sessions like that, either online or in person, before?
Yeah, I've played like 30 to 40-hour sessions before.
In person? Live?
Yeah, in person and online.
Wow.
He's a typical poker player. We've all have done that, but it is amazing. And in fact, we were talking this morning earlier about some of the nutrition, some of the eating habits, things like that you do to get ready for it, which for a 21-year-old, he has a pretty good insight to.
Joe, we're eventually going to have to talk about a couple of the hands here, but I have an email question from a listener named Keith. And if you don't mind, he wants to know about getting backers, because the word is that you had two guys, Cliff Josephy, Johnny Backs, as he's known online, and Eric Haber, is known as Sheets online. Sheets and Backs are backers of a bunch of different poker players, and we understand that they backed you into the main event. How did you get them, or how did they get you?
Well, it's very hard to come about backers, and at the time, I was on an unfortunate downswing, and these type of tournaments, a lot of players have backers because the variance is so high, and there's so many players in the these fields. So I asked my friend, and he was currently getting backed by them, and he put in a good word for me. And then they, you know, they look at your results online, and then they ask for hand histories of certain tournaments, and then they go about that from there and make their best decision.
So did they back you only in the main event?
No, they backed me in about like 18 other events.
Wow. And how does a deal like that work? Keith wants to know as much as he possibly can about backers. I think maybe he's looking for one.
Basically, the backing thing works. You get paid every month if you're up money. So you get paid 50-50. And if you're down money, you have to make up the money for the next month.
What do you mean you have to make it up?
So say you entered in $20,000 worth of tournaments and you didn't finish in a single tournament. And then next month, you cash for $20,000. Basically, that will make up for the last month.
Gotcha. Do you think you're going to get into the backer business now that you're a multimillionaire?
Yeah, I've always backed people in the past, and I've still been backing people, but not to that extreme. I mean, it may now be in bigger tournaments, but I was always backing people in smaller tournaments online and stuff.
Dennis, what kind of advice have you given Joe in the last week or so since he's won this thing? I mean, you were in the midst of final table craziness yourself, didn't win it, but came in third, and of course you've been in the whirlwind of publicity since then. What have you been able to pass along to Joe?
We've more or less just talked over things. I don't know whether it's been so much my giving him advice as just kind of comparing notes and him saying, well, you know, what happened or how did you handle this stuff, and me just reliving it a little bit. He's got a pretty good grasp on it. If you've been listening to the interviews, they've been some great answers. They've been straight from the shoulders. It's kind of nice and refreshing, actually.
Joey, let's talk a little bit about a couple of the hands here because, you know, coming from behind with deuces, threes, fours, and ace-king at a final table has got to be one of the all-time great comebacks. Of course, you were left with five big blinds at one point and went on to put together the massive chip stack and then win the whole thing. When you look back on it, what was the turning hand for you?
The turning hand was probably, I think, against Shulman with three versus jacks. I mean, I was short stack most of the day. And I was sitting with, I think, about 18 big blinds was a pretty good reshoving stack. And Shulman opened. We were playing five-handed. And, I mean, a lot of times I do fold threes there, but Shulman was opening a decent amount. And I had a lot of fold equity. And I was chipped up, like, I figure what the percentage is, I mean, at the time. But it was, like, I think a good portion. I think it was, like, 20% or something like that. And then there was a lot of fold equity. And I seen Shulman lay down a lot of hands, and he opened a lot of hands. So it was a good spot. I don't regret my shove all in. It was unfortunate that he had jacks, but, you know, I got there.
And later on, you got into it with deuces against queens with Antoine Saoud. Tell me about that hand.
Yeah, basically, you know, on TV, they cut everything down to 2 hours. So, I mean, they don't show all the hands. And when you're playing three-handed, value of the hand goes up. And when you're opening every pot and the guy to the left of you is, you know, three betting you a decent amount of time, fairly light. And twos is not a bad hand to reship because his range for calling is ace-queen, ace-king, and, like, probably, like, eights and above. So basically, twos is the same hand as eights when he shoved on me because obviously he's not going to call with sevens, sixes, fives, fours, threes for 40-some million, and he's going to call with above those and ace-king, ace-queen. So basically the eights hand is the same hand as that, but unfortunately he had queens, and I got there again. I got very lucky at the final table.
In that situation, Darvin Moon was on the button. You were the small blind, and Saoud was the large blind. And as I recall it, you two-bet it with your deuces. Then he three-bet it, and that's when you came back and shoved, right?
Yeah, like I said, there was a lot of fold equity there, and I only do that type of – I don't really call off too often with small pocket pairs, but when there's – enough fold equity and good situations, I will shove there. And, I mean, unfortunately, I had a big hand, but I don't fault my play there. I would make that play probably 100%.
Joe, when you finally got down to heads up against Darvin Moon, the first hand of heads up, he had queens, you had nines. Were you surprised when he turned over those queens, which he had slow played so much that you, frankly, had not gotten it all in right there on the first hand of heads up?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised when he flipped over queens, the way he played a preflop, and also I was surprised when he bet the turn with queens, too. I knew Darvin was going to play very aggressively against me and put me in tricky situations, and when the board came out king 5-2, I did a standard continuation bet about half the pot and he raised. And in that point in time, Darvin liked to play slow play a lot of his hands, especially top pair, and, I mean, it's not too likely you're going to make top pair and heads up, so I called one straight and see what he was going to do on the turn, and if he would have fired the turn, I would probably fold it, but the turn brought an ace, so it kind of changed the board a little bit. And then I thought, okay, if he has an ace, why is he limping in here, and why is he going to raise the flop? So I didn't really put him on an ace, and if he has a king, why is he going to fire the turn with the king? So I decided to peel the second straight, too, but I didn't know he was value betting queens, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, as you were watching all of this going down, you were actually there watching the final table. Were you surprised that Joe, with the huge chip stack when he got heads up with Darvin, wasn't playing more small ball?
Different ways to play it. That's not really Joe's style. And I think because of the aggressiveness that Darvin came out with, that Joe responded well to it. It was an interesting final table, to say the least. We were sitting back there going, both of us were, well, I'm sorry, I was talking with Barry Greenstein and some other ones. We were both wondering why either one of them was slowing down a little bit instead of being that aggressive. But I'm telling you, heads up, aggressive play usually gets rewarded. So I can't find the fault. I thought it was a very, very entertaining final table with the two of them.
Joe, when you went into it heads up against Darvin, was your plan to play big pots against him all the time?
No, my plan was to play small ball poker and play most of my hands in position and just chip up very nicely. But, I mean, unfortunately, no limit. If the other guy wants to play big, there's nothing you can do about it. So Darvin wanted to play big, and I mean, you just can't fold away every hand. So, I mean, he put me in a lot of tricky situations, and I just made sure I tried to get the money in good. I mean, I ended up laying down a big hand to him with ace-queen, which, I mean, if we were a little bit smaller in stack size, if he had still had like 50 or 60 million, I would have got it in, but we both had 100 million at the time, so I figured it was a long match and there would be better spots.
There was another crucial hand along the way, number 356. I don't know if you know him by number yet, but it's the one where you were on the button and you raised it to $3 million, and Darvin made the call, and the flop came out 10-5-9, and you both checked, and then there was that 10 on the turn, and Darvin checked, and you bet $3 million, and he quickly went all in to a pot of, you know, what was it, 10, maybe $11 million. He moved all in, making it, you know, a $47 million overbet there, and you went into the tank. And I know on TV they edited it down, so it actually was much shorter on TV than what you were doing in person. How long were you actually in the tank there, and what was going through your mind as you were processing it and trying to figure out where is this guy and where am I with what you eventually had? You turned over Jack 9 later on for a pair of nines. Where were you, and walk me through that.
Yeah, that was probably the longest decision I probably ever made at a poker table. I mean, it was a really tough spot because of the overbet. I bet $3 million to a $6 million pot, and he jammed for $59 million more. So it was a really tough spot concerning that, and I thought about it for a while. I went through all his hand ranges of what he could have and how past hand says how he's played in the past, and I went over everything, and, you know, I thought he could have Jack 8, 8, 7, Jack Queen, club draw, and also a lot of sporadic just shoving hands. I mean, obviously, my hand doesn't look like top pair because I check behind the flop, so he knows I don't have a 10, and he's been trying to apply a lot of pressure the whole time. And also, when he has a big hand like that, I don't see him just shipping there. So I went along with my read and ended up making the call.
There's no way he has a 10 there, and there's no way he has an overpair?
Occasionally there, he's going to wake up with a 10 there. He's not just going to jam an overpair. I was never worried about an overpair, especially the amount of times he's been re-raising me. He's going to re-raise an overpair there, pre-flop. So, and I didn't put him on a 10. I don't think he was just going to jam there, and he was going to check-raise a 10, or he was going to lead the turn, because a lot of the hands were checked down because he check-raised so often that I opted to check a lot of hands down the river. So if he had a 10, he's probably going to lead the turn. So I didn't put him on those type of hands, and I ended up going with the call.
You had Jack 9 for the second pair there, and Darvin had 8-7 for the open-ended straight draw, and the river came the blank 3 of hearts, and that put you up into a chip lead of $108 million to $86.5 million, and just a few hands later, it was all done. Tell me about the last hand, because we talked about the first hand where you had nines, and you were surprised to see that he had queens. Tell me about the last hand, how it played out, and whether you were surprised when you saw what he had, too.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I mean, I think I was up to like 115 or 120 million after that hand because it was like 57 more to call.
Okay.
And then I won a hand right after that with two pair with 10-9 on a king 10-7 board that I double barreled. And so I won that hand, and I had a lot of momentum, and I stole a few hands right after that. And then like the fifth hand came, and it was nines versus Jack Queen, and I looked down at nines. And I almost expected him to re-raise me at that point, the way the match was going. And he re-raised me, and it was an easier ship towards the later stages of the match because I got to see often he was 3-betting me pre-flop. And at the beginning of the match, it was a little harder because I didn't know how he was playing.
And at that point, when you shipped it with nines, before you shipped it, do you think to yourself, I know what Darvin's range is here for 3-betting me there, and I know my nines are good?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you're going to be, you know, behind because that's, I mean, that happens sometimes. But, like, I mean, sometimes you're behind, and but it was easy. It was easy ship all in, and he called me really quickly. And I thought when he flipped over his hand, it was queens at first. But I was kind of surprised to see Jack Queen.
You were surprised that he would call off his tournament for everything with Queen Jack there?
Yeah, it was like $60 million to call or $50 million to call or something like that.
Yeah. Of course, at that point, it doesn't matter whether he has Queen Jack or Ace King. It's two overcards against your pair, and so you're off on a race. I think the thing that was surprising to most people who were watching it was the way both you and Darvin have been catching cards all along through this final table. How does he not get a Queen or a Jack there?
Did you see how well I ran at the final table? I think that's probably why. I mean, Darvin had his time prior to the final table, but mine was the final table, and I ran really well there.
Yeah. So have you had a moment to breathe in the last week, Joe?
Maybe a day here or there. Not quite, though.
I know your mom was a blackjack dealer at a casino in Michigan. Is she still working there?
Yeah, she's still working there. I helped my mom and dad out both financially through all this, so I don't know what her plans are.
That's great. And will you be going back to playing in any other big tournaments anytime soon, or are you going to cool off, or what are your plans for the near future once you get done with this mad rush with Dennis in New York?
My next tournament is the PCA in the Bahamas, and that's at the beginning of January.
But between now and then?
Between now and then, I'm going to try to get out to the Five Diamond Classic in Bellagio, but I don't know if I'm going to have enough time. I got to do a show out in L.A., so, I don't know, it's a pretty busy schedule, and, I mean, I love playing poker, so I want to make as many big tournaments as I can, so.
This is all just a giant extended birthday celebration for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the money helps.
Have your friends been coming around asking for money yet?
No, I mean, I always had money in the past, too, and my friends kind of, like, grew up with me through poker, and, you know, they see me progress and stuff like that and my success before that, and they all had really high expectations before I went out there. I mean, mine wasn't quite as high as theirs because the field sizes, and I know the variance a little bit better. So, I mean, some of them, believe it or not, weren't too shocked, which is kind of weird.
I know how most parents react when their son comes to them and says, I want to play poker for a living. What were your parents' reactions when you did that as a teenager, and what do they say now?
I mean, they're very skeptical at first, and I mean, I didn't make that decision until I had a lot of success in poker. I had a job for 4 years, and once I made a substantial amount of money, that's when I decided to quit my job, and my mom kind of understood. I mean, it sucks going to work, you know, making like $50, $60 and going home and losing or winning like a few thousand. So
yeah.
I just had to quit my job, and then at 19 I moved out, and then college kind of got in the way with poker, and poker kind of got in the way with college because I was traveling a lot to play in tournaments, and decided to go take the poker route.
Dennis, are you prepping Joe for Letterman?
Not really. I'm telling you, the guy doesn't need much prepping. We're having some good talks. I'm developing a good friendship here, kind of reliving some of the things I did, and the Letterman show will go very smoothly with Joe. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Well, we're all looking forward to seeing you on there, Joe. We appreciate your time. Congratulations as the champion of the world of poker. We thank you for joining us here at the final table.
Thank you for having me.
That is this year's World Series of Poker main event champion, Joe Cada, an interview that Dennis Phillips and I recorded earlier this morning. We would normally have done it live, but he's at the Letterman show now, getting ready to record in about a half hour on a show that will air tonight. We'll take a break and come back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table live from downtown St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
Before they sit down to play today, they're talking poker with you right now. Live from Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Dennis is in New York with Joe Cada, the WSOP champ for this year. I'm Paul Harris. Joe McGowan is at Poker Coach World Headquarters in Southern Florida. And our show every week brought to you by PokerStars, the place to play online. Go to PokerStars.net and play against pros like Dennis and now Joe, who has been added to the Team PokerStars Pro roster. That's Joe Cada. And all you got to do is download the software, and boom, you're in there playing with free rolls and all sorts of other opportunities to get into big events around the world, the EPT and the LAPT and many, many more. Get that software at PokerStars.net. Congratulations to ESPN. Their ratings for the World Series of Poker this year up 8% this year, 22% over 2 years ago. And before we finish things up here, a quick goodbye to Jeffrey Pollack, who stepped down as commissioner of the World Series of Poker on Friday. Hasn't announced what his next plans are, but he has been a major force for poker in the last 4 years and in building the WSOP even to more of a global brand. He was a good friend of this show and especially of Dennis's, and we'll be sorry to see him go from the Harrah's organization, where he was also running Harrah's Interactive. And as commissioner of the World Series of Poker, if I were a betting man, I would say look for Jeffrey Pollack in another sports venue very, very soon. All right, the poker coach, Joe McGowan, you were just listening to the interview that we did with Joe Cada. I'm curious for your reaction to a couple of the hands that he talked about there.
Well, I think, Paul, that, you know, Joe said it really well, and it was his time to maybe run good and catch some cards and some things to go his way. And whoever wins it, you know, in any tournament, you don't talk about how unlucky the guy got. You know, the people that got unlucky, they didn't make it. You know, you have to run well. You have to be able to maybe catch some cards. Certainly you can win a tournament without getting, you know, as lucky looking. You know, I think there's many times when you can play and just situationally things may go your way, and you don't even realize it. You know, another guy folds Jack 10 that almost called, and he would have flopped a straight, and you had a big hand. You would have been broke, but you don't even see it, and you ran good in a way. So some things went his way, and a lot of his reasoning of why he called and made certain pushes definitely can make sense when another player has fold equity, as he says, and I've used that term a lot. A lot of poker players, of course, would use that term.
Yeah, you know what? Let's stop right there, Joe, okay, for just a moment for our beginning poker player listeners. Explain what fold equity is.
Well, if someone raises, say, or bets, and then you're going to maybe make a big push or a big raise or an all in, if they only have like 10% more chips to call, they're pretty much going to call you because there's so much in the pot. They only have 10% left of what's in the pot, say. They're going to call. They don't have much fold equity. There's not much left over for them to be able to fold their hand. If they have still 90% of their chip stack, you know, to call, and it's a humongous call, they need a huge hand typically, or great read, to call you because they have so many chips behind that are not in any jeopardy only if they make the call. So therefore, it's, you know, easier for that person to be able to fold. For instance, that Darvin Moon hand that we talked about last week with Beggs, when the pot was like almost $40 million and it was only about $6 million more for Moon to call, he really didn't have much fold equity when Beggs pushed, you know, all in there. Mm-hmm. It just so happened, as we see now, that he had king-queen, didn't have a hand at all, so he was able to
fold. Not according to what he told his wife. He lied to his wife, told her he had queens. How about that, by the way? You know it's going to be on TV, and you lie to your wife on television. How would that work out for you at home?
Well, he did that loud on purpose. That was part of his game, you know, playing that role. Hey, it's just the cards and this and that. I think he knew he was going to move coming down the stretch. In a way, if that final Tuesday before the main event, if he didn't raise with that deuce three up front and didn't play the 4-5 and like three hands, if he kept his rock-solid, super-tight image, it might be Darvin Moon that might have won the main event, because he might have gotten away with some of the plays that he made where some of the guys called him a little lighter, and it changed everybody's opinion going into the final table. Oh, Darvin Moon actually can make some plays and can be a little reckless here and there.
Yep.
So if he kept tight image, who knows what would happen.
We're all out of time for this week, but we'll be back next Tuesday at 2 with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table, an hour of poker every week on your radio, and the podcast available on thechipleader.com. For Joe McGowan and Dennis Phillips and Joe Cada, I'm Paul Harris. This is 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. Thanks for listening.